listening to Magic From Wherever I'm At with your host, the magician, time traveler, and charmer, D'Artagnan.
All right. Welcome to another edition of the podcast. I'm D'Artagnan, and today we're going to start with a story that's a little tragic, unfortunately. About 3 years ago, almost exactly, if I remember correctly, I think it was 2015, I was working in Nashville, and a gentleman came up to me, watched my show, and then came up to me afterwards and engaged me. It was a man by the name of Bill Beach, and he was a local IBM ring member. Did a little magic, you know, and he saw me out there. So we talked shop for a little bit, and then he brought his whole family, like 20 people, to see one of my shows on a Saturday, which was like a couple days later, if I remember correctly. And he just loved it. I mean, he was just eating it up. His family was awesome. His wife was very lovely. And then, like, there was about a week, I think, in between when I saw him next. And during that week, a friend of mine named Bobby Maverick had given an online lecture and had obviously talked about street magic. And so Mr. Beach had seen that. And when I came back out on Saturday the following week, so I'd been out most of the week, but when I pulled up on Saturday, he was out there. Right in the same place that I would usually work. He used to be in front of the candy store. And he was doing magic for a couple of children. And he had this funny hat on, which is sort of one of his little signature bits, I guess. And he was just having a great old time. He said he'd been out there for a few hours. We talked after his little show. And he was just a very warm and inviting person and very easy to talk to and just really good person. From there, from what I know, anyways, I shouldn't say because I didn't have a firsthand account of this, but from what I know, the moment he left there, he walked up the street, walked up Broadway, and he ran into a guy named Ryan, who usually hangs out at Layla's. And Ryan kind of does the floating card. He does a floating cigarette, basically, out in front of Layla's a lot of times. So he's into magic. You know, and he hangs out on Layla's a lot. And so Bill, or Mr. Beach, had seen him. They'd run into each other. So they started talking shop, I guess, and they went into Layla's and they had a few drinks. And from what Ryan told me and from what my recollection is, they were upstairs. And it seemed like, you know, at one stage, like Ryan had gone out for a smoke, I believe. He'd come back in. Gone back upstairs and noticed, because they had a couple shots or a couple drinks, he noticed that Mr. Beach was kind of, I don't know, like a little lethargic maybe. And so he suggested that they both go back outside, get some fresh air. Well, when they went to go down the stairs, I guess Mr. Beach passed out. And Ryan was ahead of him walking down the stairs. And Bill fell into Ryan and they both tumbled down the staircase. And Mr. Beach cracked his head at the bottom of the staircase and was bleeding. And it created, you know, a huge, crazy commotion, of course. And people rushed to, you know, their aid and stuff. And, of course, Ryan really didn't know this guy. He'd only met him just a short time ago. I really didn't know him. I knew his name was Bill, but that's about it. And I, of course, I had no idea any of this was going on. I was still out working. So then I guess the ambulance takes him to Vanderbilt, if I remember correctly, because they determine he needs some sort of emergency surgery because he's hit his head, you know, and nobody really knows what's going on. And I see Ryan like the next day, I believe, and he tells me this whole story. And I'm like, whoa, that guy just literally walked up the street to you and then he fell on the stairs and he's in the hospital and whatnot. But nobody seemed to know who he was. Like they put him in the ambulance not having known. Now, apparently, I think his wallet had fallen out as he'd fallen down the stairs, or maybe he left it at the top of the stairs or something. I don't recall exactly. And I think Layla's staff, like, recovered the wallet and then later figured out who he was. Now, meanwhile, his wife doesn't know what's happened, right? His family doesn't know what's happened. He's down here. He's down among people who don't know him. He's wiped out, had a very serious issue, been shipped to Vanderbilt. They don't know who he is because he doesn't have his ID. No one can find his ID. We don't know who he is. We started, like, trying to find out. I remember talking to my friend Bobby, and Bobby seemed to know who he was. And I remember going on Facebook and finding his wife and finding pictures of Bill and thinking, oh, that's the guy. And then, like, trying to contact his wife. But, of course, on Facebook, if you're not friends, it's difficult because it goes to a different folder and there's all these issues. And, you know, Ryan had told me this story. And then it was, like, maybe 2 days because I was sort of took care of the weekend. And then it was maybe, like, 2 days before I saw Ryan again. And when I saw Ryan next, he told me that Bill had passed away. And wow, I was like, that's incredible. Like, I can't believe it's just that quickly. It was really a shock for someone like you're not really close to. You don't really know. I mean, it was a crazy shock. Very sad, you know. It was really strange. Even now, just talking about it, it's like a really strange feeling. And when, now Ryan seemed to know because the Layla's people knew, I guess. Once they sort of figured out who he was, his wife was contacted, so forth. I guess he'd had some sort of brain aneurysm. That's why he was sort of lethargic. That's what really caused him to fall down the stairs. I'm sure the extra trauma of smacking his head on the ground probably didn't help anything, but it was really like the brain aneurysm, I think, that killed him. So, you know, it was like one of those unavoidable things. I mean, my cousin, you know, probably 2 years, let's see, 2 years after that. A year later. My cousin passed away of the exact same thing. And she was only 31. So very, you know, it can happen very fast. So Ryan and I ended up, you know, sort of being the last two people to see Mr. Beach alive. We ended up attending the Nashville Magic Club and sort of telling our parts of the story. And we met his wife, who I'd met before, but just in passing when she came to the show. And eventually, I believe they had a broken wand ceremony, which I did not attend because I was no longer in Nashville. You know, but, you know, this podcast here is going out to Bill Beach. And he was a great guy. The short, very minuscule time I knew him, he was very warm and receptive and easy to talk to. And I'm sure a great person and a great family man by all accounts. Now, we're going to progress from that rather unfortunate, sad story in a way to... something I saw a while ago, not too long ago, I mean, it was, I won't say a while ago, it was probably a couple weeks ago, and I'm a big fan of podcasts, obviously having a podcast. I've listened to podcasts since when they started, basically, and I've listened to the Joe Rogan podcast probably since the second or third episode, because I was always a big sort of stand-up fan. And recently, Teddy Atlas, who's a boxing trainer, now he's a commentator and stuff, I believe, but most of his career a trainer. He appeared on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he said something which I thought was, like, so pertinent or so interesting and pertained so... was it directly relatable to street performing and street magic? Now, basically, what he had said, and whether this is true or not, I mean, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it sounds like it is. Because he trained Mike Tyson. And when Joe Rogan was asking him about Mike Tyson, and, you know, was he the best of all time, and blah, you know, all those sort of questions everybody has comparing, you know, the greats of different eras, Teddy Atlas had said that if you took Mike Tyson's record, which was like something in the 50s and like 4 or 5 losses, I think, total, right? Whereas most people would say he's, you know, 52-5 or 55-5 or whatever his career record ended up being. Teddy Atlas said that he thought Mike Tyson was actually 0-5. So all those losses, whatever loss, you know, 4 or 5 losses that he had, Teddy Atlas only considered those losses. And the explanation he gave was one of the best explanations, I think, for something which is so directly transferable. So he said he thought Mike Tyson was like 0-5, let's say, because Mike Tyson had, like, literally superhuman ability. You know, he was faster, stronger, meaner. He had like every advantage like innately in him, you know, which of course was brought out through the training and stuff. And he was so superior, Teddy Atlas said, to like all the people he was facing who were the best in the world. But he was so much, you know, so superior to those people that he was never really challenged, beat those people easily. I mean, if you're a boxing fan at all, you've been watching boxing, you remember some of those, like, you know, fights that lasted less than a minute and so forth, right? Against people who were supposedly, you know, on the same level, at least, you know, in the same category. Let's say they certainly weren't on the same level. And he just ate those people up like crazy, right? He just was like knocking people out. People were scared of him. Yeah, he was like a one-man wrecking crew, just a demolition. But Teddy Atlas said there was only, you know, those losses that Tyson took. Those were the five times where like all that natural ability and that aggression and those advantages were actually met with resistance. And this is the important point here. And he says on all, let's say, five of those occasions that Tyson actually met with resistance, he lost all five of those fights. Now, whether that's true or not, or, you know, whose side you stand on in history or whatever, the sentiment is the same. Because in street performing, you're not really get better. I mean, you get better slowly when everything is going good, right? You know, you're working on a Saturday where there's streams of people, or a Sunday where, you know, maybe a little less people, but it's the, you know, you work in a place where there's a day, you know, you're working on a 4th of July or something like that, where there's just like ungodly amounts of people walking by, like most Saturdays, almost that everywhere. And you don't really learn much on those. You don't progress very fast. It's a very slow process because there's no, you're not meeting any resistance. And this is the key parallel between what Teddy Atlas said. You meet resistance as a street performer when you have to work on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday or when it's 35 degrees out, right? And you under normal circumstances, you'd be wearing gloves, right? Or, you know, there's just so few people. And actually, my friend Warpo was one of the people who beat this into me when I first started. I remember one day in particular, we were at his Wizard's Tower, and a friend of ours, Katie, who's a part of a ukulele duo called The Little Things, she was there, and it was like a blustery day by any, like, Winnie the Pooh standards. I mean, it was like blowing wind, it was cool, it was probably in like the, you know, low 40s. And Katie sort of looked at me and said, are you going out? And I remember I looked at Warpo and I said, are we going out? And Warpo said, oh yeah, we're going out. And I was like kind of surprised, to be honest. And then we did go out, and we were on opposite corners of Jackson Square, or sort of adjacent corners, I guess, on Decatur. And it seemed like there was just nobody out there. Like there was, it was cold, it was blowing wind. It was just sparse people. And man, that is when you, I will tell you, that is when you improve, because you got to get so good at stopping people and putting yourself out there, you know, taking chances and extroverting yourself and being relentless. You got to be relentless. And Warpo and I both had a great night, made some really good money concerning what was out there, certainly. And I even remember this couple who had come out of the Oyster House after the show was over. They stopped and talked with me for maybe like 20 minutes after the last show I did. And like, it was already in the 30s by then. Neither of them had a jacket on. I remember saying to the lady who just kept talking to me, I was like, you guys need to go put some jackets on and get inside. Like I had like three layers on. I had a blade, you know, I have a blazer that's like extra thick, corduroy and stuff on. And I told them, like, you're going to catch pneumonia. You got to leave. We got to end this conversation. As much as I'm enjoying it, you got to end this conversation. And so we did. And that was like a very important lesson in my early, you know, earlier development, where I was met with resistance and overcame it. And that's basically what I'm talking about here. You know, the way you improve anything is when you meet with resistance. When basically things screw up or are extremely hard, that is when you truly grow. And that's how you become really good at something. So take that to heart. And that's all for now. You know, we talked about Mr. Beach, and we talked about resistance and Teddy Atlas. That's it for now. If you need to reach me, I'm D'Artagnan Magic on all social media. And of course, you can find me at d'artagnanmagic.com. If you're enjoying the podcast, you think it's fantastic, please leave us a 5-star review. Myself and I should say us, I mean it's me, basically. Leave me a 5-star review if you love the podcast. It helps iTunes to market and get it out to more people. It'll be seen by more people if you leave a review. And thank you if you do. I will mention your name on here if you leave a review. I believe at this juncture so far we have Nathaniel Green from Chicago. And yeah, I'll have to look at the other reviews. We only have a couple up there. And I'll start mentioning you on the podcast as well, too. If you need help with any sort of questions or comments or anything you have, of course, you can reach me on the social media. You can send me an email to d'artagnanmagic@gmail.com. And I have a whole course which you can take now to learn how to create presentations and craft characters, you know, build your character in terms of like who you are when you perform. If that interests you, you just shoot me an email or go to d'artagnanmagic.com/real magic. And we'll be back again next week, hopefully with something a little less tragic, a little more uplifting. Until then.